Zorbapastor on Your Health is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorbapastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorbapastor.
I'm here, too.
He's right there.
That's right.
We're going to spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office.
That's right. That's right.
Does it look virtual, or does this look real here?
No, I think it looks real to me. I'm looking around here. I can see, you know, it's real stuff.
There's real stuff?
It's real stuff,
Physical goods are here.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Okay.
Good stuff,
yeah, we're going to talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few of your voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics, Zorba.
Right. Muscular strength, physical fitness. And how does that play a role if you've got the diagnosis of cancer? Some new information that I think is really, really important for anyone who has had cancer in the past or is suffering from cancer right now. And then we're going to talk about air pollution and the ability of people to actually focus on everyday tasks. Does it actually interfere with that? So I think it looks at air and clean air and the importance of clean air, and that has lots of ramifications.
Sure does. And what's our special recipe today?
It's wonderful. It's sausage and kale black bean soup. Now, I'll tell you, I am generally not a kale fan. I know.
I've seen your posts on Facebook.
You know,
you
I get pushed back. I have a t-shirt, too much kale. I stop. I won't eat kale ice cream. I'm sorry. That's not something that's ever on my plate. But this is a great recipe. Sausage and kale black bean soup. If you like kale, if you like beans, if you like sausage, this recipe is for you.
To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us now from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Absolutely. How can we help you?
Well, in the past few years, I've suffered from a couple of episodes of BPPV.
Mm-hmm. Basically, it's positional vertigo, benign, but it's not benign if you have it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it can be debilitating.
Right, right. So tell me, when did it start?
Well, it started a few years ago, and I can't even tell you what led to it. It was quite sudden, and I've had it probably about 3 or 4 times since then.
Mm-hmm.
When I do have it, you know, I try to do the at-home positioning exercises.
Right.
And at times it's so bad I have to go into physical therapy.
Wow.
So My question is there anything that can be done to prevent this? I've done some research. I haven't been able to find anything.
Right. Well, let me tell you this. I suffer from it, too. So I'm with you. Simpatico. I mean, I don't have it as bad as you have it. But it starts all of a sudden, and the theory is there is a little piece of the almost calcium, some sort of calcification, and we've got the semicircular canals, the canals in our head, in our ear, that decide what our position is of our brain and whether or not we are in the right position up and down. Remember when you were a kid and you would twirl around and you thought it was funny?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we find it funny as adults is part of the question. We don't like that feeling at all. So the theory is that this little almost calcification is outside of the right canal, the correct canal where it should be. And then you do something called Epley's maneuver. Physical therapy does it, or you do it at home. And the idea is to move this piece of something that may be calcium out of the wrong canal into the right canal. And that's the theory. Now, whether or not this theory actually holds truth in terms of what it is, because I've done some research on it, it's a theory. We can't actually see it. But generally, the Epley's maneuver will work. But so sometimes it's pretty bad, so you have to go into PT.
Yes, I would say almost every time it's gotten so bad that after a couple weeks, I have to go into PT, and I'm not able to work sometimes as well.
It's bad. So I have a question for you. Do you know when it's beginning to start? In other words, do you have a premonitory symptom?
I do not. I mean, it can be quite sudden where, I mean, it might even be, in the middle of the night when I turn over and it wakes me up. because I'll start to get very dizzy and nauseous.
So have you tried any medications? There's no medication that's actually FDA approved for this, but have you tried antihistamines, you know, which we use for dizziness, Dramamine and other antihistamines, non-sedating antihistamines such as Allegra? Have they worked for you at all or helped?
I have not tried an antihistamine. And would you take that at the beginning of a symptom or just stay on it continuously?
Well, you know, if I had it as bad as you have it, I'd do a few things. First of all, as soon as it happens, I would start an Epley's maneuver. Now, I've got a question for you. When you do it at home, if you do it, how often do you actually do this maneuver? And by the way, we'll put this on our website so that people can actually look at it. There's some really good YouTube videos that show people how to actually do this at home. But how many times a day do you do it when you're doing it at home?
I would say about 3 times.
Okay, so you're doing it the right number of times. Some people do it once a day, and I think it's much better to do it 2 or 3 times. How, when you say it has happened over and over, has it happened once a month, once a year? Any idea where it happens?
About 3 times a year.
So what I would do if I had what you have, I'd do a few things. First of all, I would start on Epley's maneuver. That's basically what we know. You may have to go into a physical therapy. I would take an antihistamine, even though there's no proof that they absolutely work. If I had it as bad as you have it, I would take that. And there's something else that I would actually consider. If you're getting it 3 or 4 times a year and it's this severe, I would consider taking a non-sedating antihistamine every day and see whether or not it cuts down on how often the benign positional vertigo happens, or if it decreases the severity so you can basically take care of it at home.
Okay, great. And is there a brand that you would recommend for
I would
that,
go. Or? I would go to a generic Zyrtec, and if you tolerate it, what I would do is say, hey, I don't know if these antihistamines work, but I'm going to take one every single day, and then maybe if I get the vertigo, it won't be as severe and I won't have to go into physical therapy and I can handle it at home. Once again, there's not great proof about this, but I would try everything since this is happening 2 to 3 times a year. When I get it, I only get it once every year or two, and I can do my Epley's maneuver at home. That's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nobody knows why it starts. It can start with a head injury. It can start without a head injury. I don't think there's any good evidence. And why it happens to some people versus others, it just happens because of bad luck.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I really appreciate your help.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's get to our first healthy living topic. I'm going to read this headline. This is new research: muscular strength and good physical fitness linked to lower risk of death in people with cancer.
Yeah, don't you find that interesting?
That sounds. That,
I mean, just as an idea,
me.
It's the British
yeah.
Medical Journal. It's the Journal of Sports Medicine. We know it's good for cardiovascular health. We know that reduction of heart attacks, reduction of stroke, but how is it connected to cancer? We're not exactly sure. Really interesting study. And they looked at people. Basically, this is a pooled study of different data, 40 studies. They looked around. They looked at studies. They looked at physical fitness, which is often part, and something called grip strength. So grip strength for some people can be a sign of how healthy they are.
Oh, now, interesting.
Now, for me, because I've got arthritis in my wrist, it may not be a good indicator. But if you don't have bad arthritis in the wrist, it can be a really good indicator. So they looked at grip strength, they looked at the ability for people to lift weights, they looked at cardiovascular fitness, and the pool data showed that a combination of muscle strength and cardiovascular fitness, in other words, getting on a treadmill, moving, or just exercising to get your heart going, reduce the risk, not only all-cause risk, because we know it works for heart attack and stroke, but also the risk of cancer. And it turned out it was somewhere between a 10% and a 40%, which is huge, reduction in death from cancer.
Hmm.
So I think it's another reason to look at exercise with that. So you've known people with cancer throughout your lifetime, I'm sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the problem is when you have cancer, especially if you're suffering from it or you have chemotherapy, you feel tired, you feel weak. This study shows you've got to do something. You've got to move your muscles. You've got to get up and move around for whatever you can do, because anything you can do to improve your strength and your cardiovascular fitness, meaning aerobic exercise, is going to reduce the risk that you're going to die from cancer. And I think that's critically important for people who suffer from cancer to know.
You're talking about grip strength. Is that usually a pretty good indicator of physical fitness? Or, I mean, you talked about arthritis maybe not being...
Well, arthritis, would differentiate.
But have you heard
that
before about grip strength?
Absolutely.
Being
it's kind
a
of
test?
An interesting thing. So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you notice when people shake their hands, how they shake your hands?
Sure. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Some people go really hard. And
that's
just,
right.
Yeah. And then other people are just kind of like,
that's
eh.
right. So I've been to Utah numerous times because I've spoken there. We're on public radio in Utah. I like it. Everyone in Utah grips stronger than people in Wisconsin.
Really?
But I have to tell you, it's very noticeable. You go into Utah. And I think it really has to do with the fact that in Utah, many people are Mormon. They go on their mission trip. Part of the mission trip is learning how to give a good, strong handshake.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting because the handshake, you don't want it to be too strong, but you don't want it to be too weak. But
right.
it turns
there's
out
there's a sweet spot there.
There's a sweet. Turns out though, grip strength can be a marker for strength in and of itself.
Hmm.
And so that's what one of the things that they often use when they're looking at studies. They'll have people do a grip strength, they'll measure it out, and they'll put that on there. And that's one of the things that was measured in a number of these cancer studies. So it doesn't mean you should go and get those, I don't know what you call them. You
those
know,
little squeezer things?
Little
I
squeezer.
Have those, and I keep them in the car for like long road trips.
Yeah, and
I just kind of...
Even because you want to improve your grip, or
well,
you want to stay
awake?
It's
good for guitar playing, you know, to have like a good
for
grip. It helps
playing.
With guitar.
Guitar
yeah.
playing.
So sometimes I'm in driving long distance.
Well, you know what? You're going to live longer.
Based on the grip. Awesome. All right. 800-462-7... I'll take that. 800-462-7...
You got it, man.
What is it? It's 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's go to a voicemail now. Let's try to help out a caller from Oklahoma.
I have a question about my, when I urinate, there's just a very strong smell of kind of fruity, a fruity smell or a wheat kind of something smell of my urine, and it's very strong, and it doesn't have anything to do with me eating fruit or sweets, and I wonder what Dr. Zorba would say about that. Thank you very much for taking my call. God bless. Bye.
Thanks a lot. Well, you know, it's interesting. People, there are a number of things that can cause smelly urine.
Okay.
A lot of things can cause smelly urine. So first of all, let's assume hygiene is an area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that can cause smelly urine, because it's really not the urine you're smelling, but it's the perineum, the hygiene of the area. So let's put that off to the side, because that's pretty kind of obvious in some ways. Another thing has to do with hydration. If you're not hydrated, if you basically don't drink enough water, often your urine is concentrated, and that in itself can produce a smell, because urine has a smell. Walk into a nursing home, go into a nursing home in a room, you'll often, if there's incontinence, you can smell urine, because urine itself has a smell. You decrease that smell by hydration. Then there's certain foods that can do it. Asparagus can do it for a number of people. Not just fruits, but you want to see whether or not there's a food specifically that does it. The real issue is that people sometimes, certainly in my office, would come in and say, hey, my urine smells. Do I have urinary tract infection? It's easy to find that out. You give a urine sample, you do something called the dipstick, and you find that out. But that often is accompanied, you know, by symptoms. So the reality is hydrate, clean it up, see whether or not foods do it, and don't think about it and worry about it.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, before the break, it's time to scroll through the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for another edition of
Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
Yeah, you got it. You got the little bling bling. All right, Zorba. You recently took a trip.
I'm not a singer. I'm not a singer.
No, you sound like a singer, drummer.
When I was 12, but I can.
Soprano, right? Yeah. Soprano?
Yeah, high soprano.
High soprano.
Embarrassing when you're in eighth grade, let me tell you.
Makes for a good story now, though.
That's right. At the age of 77, I can finally look back and not be fully embarrassed.
All right, you recently took a trip to Colorado.
I did.
And you posted all kinds of photos on our Facebook page.
That's right, ski trip.
But one of those photos really struck a nerve with our listeners. It was a photo of you standing next. Now, you let me know if you remember. Okay. I'm sure you remember this. You were standing next to a yellow 1970s Ford Pinto station wagon.
I did.
And you called it one of your, dream cars.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Where did you find that? Was that like a parking ramp?
Parking lot in Denver at the Denver Art Museum. I looked at this thing and I said, oh, my God, that is my dream car. And one of the reasons is that when you stand next to it, it's actually a really low car.
It looked low.
The car is low. I have not become taller, but the car is low. And I looked at it and I said, oh my gosh, I really wanted this car when this car came out, but I never bought it.
Why did you want one of these?
Why do you want anything? I mean, there are needs and wants. I just looked at the car and I thought, this is a car I really like to have. It's got huge, like it's a station wagon that looks like it's got a huge area in the back. By today's standards, it is not huge.
Right. It's pretty small by today's standards.
Yeah, but when I went, come on. You know, and then it's got glass all around it. So, you know, there's hardly any metal on there. It's like glass all around. So you feel like you're in a fishbowl.
Yeah.
And you can see 360 degrees.
I love that.
I just love it. And it was yellow.
Of course. It was
yellow. Come on. A yellow car? Yeah. It's wonderful.
I wanted a station wagon too. And I actually ended up buying one like after college. You know what a Buick Roadmaster station wagon is with the wood paneling
from
like the 90s?
Yeah, got it. Fake wood paneling.
They call it a bubble car.
That's right. I love it.
It's like a greenhouse on wheels.
Well, this is kind of like that.
Kind of like a smaller version of that, right?
Yeah. Let's go on with the... go ahead.
I miss it a lot. Right. I used to have one. It was a money pit, but it was really fun to drive. It just coasted along. It was like a big Cadillac kind of feel. All right. Anyways, this photo got a lot of comments from our listeners.
Really?
I'll read a few.
Okay.
First off, Jane wrote, I had a Pinto hatchback. I was so glad when it died. Betty wrote, does the wagon also burst into flames upon impact?
I know.
Was that just the hatchback?
No. Because I was looking at it. That was a big thing with the band. That's right. I don't know.
Yeah, they would explode, apparently. David wrote, in some odd transcendental kind of way, it matches your mustache.
Oh, I love it.
Wow.
Thank you.
A station wagon matches Zorba's
Pinto,
mustache.
A yellow Pinto station wagon matches my mustache. That means the car is for me. You know, I could have put a card on it. If you want to sell it, let me know, but it was in Colorado.
Yeah,
so,
maybe there's one here for you. Rick in Omro, Wisconsin wrote, trust me, it is not a dream car. I remember my dad getting one as a loaner. We drove to Wautoma from Oshkosh, and it did not have sufficient power to climb the hills without slowing down.
From Wautoma to Oshkosh in Wisconsin. We're not in Colorado.
Right.
And
there
are hills,
huge.
But the hills are not huge.
Just little mounds. I can't even imagine what would happen in some place truly hilly like western Wisconsin or, heaven forbid, real mountains.
Well, this was in Colorado, so it was a real mountain.
Gets
right,
around,
real mountain
apparently.
Place. Well, it does in Denver. I don't know if they go to the Front Range.
All right, finally, Kathy in Racine, Wisconsin wrote.
That's a lot of comments
that
we
got
from
this. Oh, this is just a small sampling.
Are you serious?
This got a lot of comments.
So this particular I take pictures
Struck
and post them because people like to look at the things sometimes that I do. And when I saw this car, I thought I would just post this picture. I didn't realize how many comments I got
People love their Pinto or hate their Pinto.
Yeah, right.
Kathy in Racine, Wisconsin wrote, we had a Chevy Vega station wagon. That thing would dog on hills and made us late to a James Taylor concert at Alpine Valley in the 70s. It's a nice visual, isn't it?
Them driving
to the James Taylor
concert.
And the
car can't make it up the hill in Wisconsin to a James Taylor concert. I've got the whole thing. There's a song there. There's definitely a song there.
Yeah,
I wish I had it queued up.
I don't have any James Taylor.
You can have it queued
ready.
Up. No. But you could do a song.
Doesn't he have a song called Traffic or Traffic Jam or something?
He's got a whole bunch of songs.
James Taylor. Yeah. All right, you can always keep up with Zorba's busy and fruitful life on the Zorba Pastor
Fruitful.
On Your Health Facebook
page. Because it was yellow and it was banana colored? Yeah, is that why you said fruitful?
It's a banana yellow.
Where did that come from?
I'm just writing things. And of course, if you have a healthy living question for the good doc, just post it there or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls to come, more of your emails, and we're going to put together a hearty recipe for sausage and kale black bean
soup. Delicious.
Ooh, yeah. All of that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio in Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. And the legend right there is across the desk from me. The legendary doctor,
the legend.
Zorba Pastor. He's right there. I'm looking right at him in the flesh.
I have never been called legendary.
What?
You know
Come
what?
On.
What a nice compliment.
Come
Thank
on.
You. Not even my children don't even call me legendary.
And, you know, I usually say something about what you're wearing at this point
I'm
in the
black.
Show. Yeah, you have a black turtleneck.
That's it, black
and
turtleneck.
You have, so this is a feast, a visual black, feast
a visual,
for me.
Visual
because
feast.
You're also wearing a hat, and on the hat is a turtle.
It's
so you
a
have
turtle.
A turtleneck and a turtle hat. Was that on purpose? You don't even know. I can tell you don't even remember doing that.
I don't remember doing it. I picked up the hat today, but I didn't realize that I have a turtle hat.
It's all turtle
and
everything
turtle.
Today.
I am fashion impaired. You have to understand
okay.
that. So when people look at something and they say, you really dress nicely, I think, wow, that's really kind of nice, but it's random. You know, that's it. Thank you so much.
Of course. Yeah.
Unplanned.
I love it.
But it looks good.
It looks great. All right, let's do a recipe. We're talking about sausage and kale black bean soup.
So first of all, do you like beans?
Sure.
Beans are really, really important. And the issue about beans is kind of interesting. First of all, they're a really good source of protein. I mean, they really are. And they're underplayed in many ways. Look in the store. When was the last time you bought dried beans?
My wife makes a bean soup a couple of weeks ago, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got to look for them. And there are bean combinations you can see. And there are, you know, combination of beans. There's a wonderful 15-bean soup that I happen to like. Mm. Beans are an important source of protein.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, there's fiber, there's protein, there's filling.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, people who often go on bean diets lose weight.
Okay.
Because it's such a good source of protein and it fills you up. Sausage, who doesn't like sausage in Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, yeah.
Let me know. All right, 2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea extra virgin olive oil.
Bunch of cloves of garlic that you're going to mince. You can use 5 cloves, you can use 10 cloves, as much garlic as you want, but do not skimp on the garlic.
All right, minced garlic.
Okay, 1 pound of ground sausage.
All right, 1 pound of ground sausage of choice.
A head of fresh kale, chopped and stemmed.
A head of fresh kale.
In this particular recipe, we're going to use black beans from cans,
mm-hmm.
only because it's easier. You can, of course, use a dried bean, which is going to have a lot more texture to it. But 2 15-ounce cans of black beans, or the equivalent of dried beans that you soak.
All right, 2 cans of beans, black beans.
2 sweet potatoes peeled, cut into 1-inch cubes.
2 sweet potatoes.
You're going to use 3 32-ounce cartons of a vegetable broth.
Okay.
Okay, small sweet onion chopped, a nice good onion chopped.
1 small sweet onion chopped.
Now we're going to get to our seasonings.
Mm-hmm.
1/4 teaspoon of cumin, ground cumin.
1/4 little tea ground cumin.
1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper.
1/2 little tea cayenne pepper.
1/2 teaspoon of chipotle chili powder.
1/2 little tea chipotle chili powder.
1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder.
1/2 a little tea of garlic powder.
And a packet, or roughly a tablespoonful, if you've got it, of sazon seasoning. Now, this is a seasoning made from Goya. It's a standard in Latin American foods. And if you've never tried, it's sort of like Old Bay is a standard in seafood in New England.
Mm-hmm.
Try it. Sazon Goya seasoning.
All right. A packet of Sazon seasoning.
And some ground pepper.
Ground pepper to taste.
Okay. Easy to make. In a large pot, heat the oil, saute the onions and ground sausage till it's cooked through. Add everything else except the kale.
Don't add the kale.
Don't add the kale. get it all together. I would cook it for probably 15 minutes, maybe up to an hour, very, very slowly. And then when you're all finished with that cooking and it tastes kind of good to you, for the last 15 minutes, put the kale in.
Okay.
And you've got a great recipe. And once again, if you decide you want to start with dried beans, which are a little bit more work, not very much at all, but if you have an Instant Pot, it's really easy. You just cook those according to the directions. If you want a copy of this, guess where they can go. But guess.
The mighty internet, maybe.
The mighty internet. That's right. That's zorbapastor.org, or, of course, through Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. You can call anytime. You can leave us a voicemail. We're going to go back to the phones here. We're going to help out a caller in Boonton, New Jersey. But before that, I just want to set it up real quick. On a recent show, Zorba, we had talked about tinnitus, and put out a call to our listeners because it seems like a lot of people have this situation, and you want to get people's experiences. And
for
we have a caller here who has tinnitus, and I'm going to bring her in right now. Hello, is this Boonton, New Jersey?
Yes, it is. Hi, Dr. Zorba and Carl. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
Of thanks
you're
for calling.
Welcome. So share your wisdom about tinnitus or tinnitus. By the way, let me just tell you about the pronunciation. Pronunciation, there are two different pronunciations, and they're both correct. I mean, tinnitus is used by some people. Tinnitus are used by others, but the Brits say tinnitus.
Of course.
And the of course, right. That's right. As you know, those Brits.
Those Brits.
Anyway, that's right. But it's pronounced both ways. So share the wisdom that you have for our listeners. You've got it, obviously.
Yes. So I guess, first of all, I refer to it as tinnitus.
Which is totally fine.
It's totally fine.
Tinnitus.
You know, it's tomatoes, tomatoes, potatoes, potatoes.
Exactly. So I've had it all my life. I was born with it.
Really?
We have in my family some sort of genetic hearing loss where my mom has it. My brother and I have it. I have one child who has tinnitus, but no, we also have hearing loss. He doesn't have any hearing loss, and my other child escaped everything.
But I've got a question. Did you have hearing aids when you were younger? Was it that much of a hearing loss?
I did not get my first set of hearing aids until I was in my 20s. I probably could have benefited from them earlier, but my experience is that, so I'm almost 60 years old now. So my brother is very, very bothered by it. Me personally, I'm not as bothered by it. I mean, it's there. It's constant. It increases with stress, tiredness, dehydration, being in a loud environment, whatever.
Right.
So there are times where it's a little worse. So my way of managing it is always like having background sound, you know, the radio, the TV, talk radio in particular, or anything like even running the dishwasher is enough for me. Like if I'm in the room with that on, you know, it's enough to distract me. And at night when I'm laying in bed and I really don't want any noise or anything and it's bothering me, I play little brain games. So like, for instance, try to, you know, think of it all, a song that you know the words to and try to, like, recite the lyrics in your head.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I play this other little game where I pick a letter of the alphabet and just think of as many words of that start with that letter as I possibly can. And it just takes my focus away from the tinnitus.
By the way, that is a great idea. That I've not, because I suffer from it, not like you do. There are times that it bothers me. Times that I notice it, like right now, I'm noticing it because we're talking about it. You know, that's sort of how it is. I know that I will never hear silence ever again. I mean, you never heard silence because you have tinnitus, you know, so you never experience it. I sort of remember what silence is, but I don't really. It's very interesting because when I think of silence, I have the tinnitus. And mine started minimally, but it started when I was a teenager. I remember I walked into a store and I thought I was listening to the burglar alarm system. I looked up and there was a wire and I thought, I can hear that. And I probably said to my mom, I remember I was with my mom and I probably said, do you hear that sound? And she probably looked at me and said, we're here for something else. You know, so she was not interested. It was something like that. I've got this image in my brain. But anyway, getting back to it, distraction is important, but I never thought of, and the sound is the way of distracting the brain in some ways. I always have something on in the background, no matter where I am, because it makes a difference. But the idea of a brain game when you're trying to go to sleep, if the tinnitus bothers you, I have never heard of that. That is brilliant. And I'll tell you what I do. I listen to boring books from the library, like Confucius. You know, and because I want to be distracted when I go to sleep at night, and I put it on for 30 minutes, and I know that Confucius is on there, and I'm kind of listening to it, and I'm going, oh my God, I'm so bored with this, and then I go to sleep. So that's the other form of distraction. So, well, thank you for sharing this. I think a lot of our listeners are really going to be happy with it because really, tinnitus and tinnitus is something that really is very, very bothersome to people. So. Thanks for sharing. And thanks for sharing your story with us. That really is helpful.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, take care now.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. Let's try to help out a caller in Sandpoint, Idaho.
I would like to know what is the normal dose of vitamin D for a person who has a deficiency, but I don't know if I still have a deficiency, but I've always been taking 2,000 of vitamin D, and I wondered if that is appropriate for my age. I'm 79. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, 2,000 is a good dose to take, and that's really what I recommend people take. If you've got a vitamin D deficiency, and the feds do not recommend that you actually screen for vitamin D, but if you had vitamin D screened for instance, if you have osteoporosis, quite often they'll put you on 50,000 units once a week for a certain number of weeks, then recheck that to make sure that your vitamin D level gets up to normal. And that's a prescription 50,000 unit tablet. But 2,000 units a day, perfectly fine. Don't need to be screened. I recommend that for everyone. If you look at, you know, vitamin D and how much you actually need when you're out in the sun, you know, first of all, if you're in northern climates, that would mean you would have to go outside in Wisconsin in the winter, take off your clothing, and stand there for about 15 to 20 minutes. Now, if you did, you might help get your vitamin D in the middle of the day. You might get your vitamin D, but you would die because the weather is so cold. So the answer is 2,000 units a day for everybody.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, we always love hearing from the Grammar Police. I know you do, especially do.
I do.
This is a new one, though. This voicemail came.
I think about them every day.
You do? That's great. I don't think that's unhealthy. I don't know.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
This voicemail came from a division of the Grammar Police.
Wait a minute, I'm trying to improve my grammar.
Okay.
You know, I'm trying to improve my grammar. That's right. Speak the King's English.
Okay.
Used to be the Queen's English, but now it's the King's English. So please go on.
Okay, thank you. This is from a division of the Grammar Police that just likes to get under the hood, get a little greasy, tell it like it is. This is from the Truck Police.
Oh, no, it's the... Truck Police. Be sure and tell them Large Marge sent you.
My goodness.
Did you know? Do you remember Large Marge? Did you ever see Pee Wee's Big Adventure?
Oh, yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah,
she was the trucker.
Of course.
Kind of a, I think she was
a ghost. Oh, yes.
Remember, she makes that crazy face?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes, I do remember that. That's
haunted me as a child.
Pee Wee, that's right. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Anyways, okay, that was kind of a lot to take in.
Well, that's because we're running on fumes today.
Okay, that's right. Running on empty.
That's right.
The following voicemail is from a listener in Wisconsin.
You were talking about processed food, and Dr. Zorba mentioned Swanson dinners, and you said, oh, yeah, the Swanson truck that came around, I think it was you. Anyway, that's a Schwann's truck. The two are not the same. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know,
that's on me. I said the Swanson's truck. That's it's right. The Schwann's truck.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Schwann's truck. Yeah. That was different. They're not. I don't think they're in business now.
I don't know. They haven't seen them in a while.
They were very, very big. They were around. They brought in food, frozen food, and other things. But then there was the Swanson TV dinner on the aluminum plate.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not on the aluminum plate now because people put it in the microwave. On the aluminum plate, I remember my mother worked at Weibolt's, the department store for the working woman, on Thursday, and I was able to get a Swanson TV dinner, the chicken, and I remember if she made it the special way, she put on Kraft dressing before she put it
she
in
put a
the
extra,
oven.
A little post-production on that TV dinner.
Yeah, a little corn, the other stuff in the middle was really...
I remember the Salisbury steak. You remember that one, that TV dinner?
Yeah, that's right.
The edges would be warm, but the middle would still be kind of icy.
That's right. You know those days, those days are gone, but not forgotten.
There you go. Thanks, Truck Police. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Do you want to join the ever-growing Grammar Police Force? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, more emails, and more voicemails. Another healthy living topic as well. So keep it right here on Zorba
Pastor on your health.
Carl Christensen in Buck Studio with legendary Dr. Zorba Pastor, legendary radio doctor. He's right over there across the desk from me. The number to call if you have a question for the good doc is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But first, air pollution.
Right, air pollution and focusing on tasks.
Oh.
Kind of an interesting thing. So it's a small study. Very interesting study. 26 people participated, and they basically were exposed to particulate matter, things like smoke, you know, that might come from a chimney, things of that nature, or smoke from a candle. You know, when you snuff out a candle, there's smoke from a candle, and they looked at clean air in there, and then they put people in tasks that they had to do, sort of memory tasks, working with memory, doing multiple digits and other things, and lo and behold, they found that when people were exposed to pollutants in the environment, especially pollutants that were particulate, we'll say diesel, if you've ever been in the back of a truck and all of a sudden the diesel, that's all particulate matter, that it affected their ability to actually think, cognate, and solve problems.
Huh.
In a test situation.
Okay.
And so now, why is that the case? Of course, we don't have any idea. But I think it looks again at the importance of good, clean, pure air makes a difference for our brains. Now, what comes to mind with this is vaping.
Sure.
Because you see people, I see people vaping all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not. I don't see people smoking as much, but I often see people, I'm sure you have too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who sort of stand outside a building or something, they're vaping. I don't know if they're, vaping to get stoned, you know, in the middle of the day, or they're just vaping nicotine or vaping, you know, something else like marijuana. But you see that all the time. And once again, if you're doing anything that has any kind of pollution, it may affect your brain. So we think of it as in many ways sort of innocuous because we don't look at it. But the fact is we don't know what vaping material in the environment does. This particular thing looks at particulate material. So one of the things that also comes to mind, as you know, I travel a lot to India.
Mm-hmm.
I've traveled to Tibet. And they use incense all the time.
Sure, yeah.
Well, incense is particulate matter.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a number of Tibetan monks who have chronic obstructive lung disease, COPD, not from smoking, but being around incense all the time, which actually produce it too.
Hmm.
So one of the things you can do in your house that may actually improve your ability to think, and people are always saying, what can I do to think better and be on task, is look towards, number one, making sure that the filter in your furnace is clean all the time. In other words, there's a regular way that you keep the filter on your furnace in the wintertime, nice and clean. And you may also look at an air purifier to purify the air that you live in, especially in your bedroom. Mm-hmm. Think about it. You spend a third of your life, roughly, laying in bed in your bedroom. And if you don't have a room that has enough movement of air in it, keeping the window open slightly, having an air purifier, that may influence your ability to think during the daytime the next day. So I think we have to take some issue with the study in the fact that pure, clean air may give you a good brain.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's try to help out a caller now in Morristown, New Jersey. Hi.
Hello. My question is about cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
I was recently told that my LDL is high, and I'm wondering what else can I do to bring it down. I exercise 3 days a week.
Good.
I've limited my intake of oils, cooking with oils and mm-hmm. so forth. What else can I do?
Well, first of all, you're doing a lot of, if you're exercising and you're making some lifestyle changes, so you reduce the fats in your diet. Remember, there are good fats and bad fats. For instance, the fat from salmon is good fat. The fat from beef, basically, you could think of as bad fat. But limiting oils can make a difference. But a lot of this are genetics. So tell me about your mom, your dad, your family history. Any heart disease in your family?
No. No heart disease.
What were your numbers, by the way? Did they say the numbers were super high or just a little bit high?
Yeah, a little bit out of norm. Mm-hmm. I believe it was 122 or 120.
Uh-huh. Well, 122 or 120 is not bad. But let me give some caveats here. If you have diabetes, I assume you don't have diabetes, correct?
Correct.
If you have diabetes, we want to push that cholesterol down because we know diabetics are an increased risk for heart attacks, and basically we've got to push it down. If you have a previous heart attack, we also have to push it down. If you have hypertension, we may push it down. But if we measured your cholesterol every single day for 30 days, it would vary by 10 to 15% around a mean number. So in other words, we only measured it at one point in time, and it was elevated. The new normals that are on there is anything over 100. We sort of talk about and tell people to watch, but the reality is that's only one factor in heart disease. It's family history that we don't often take into consideration that is a huge factor. It's whether or not people exercise and so on. So I would say, well, first of all, what did your doctor say? Let me get back to that. Did they recommend anything?
Recommend going to a low cholesterol diet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was the recommendation.
Yeah, my recommendation is actually a little bit different. My recommendation is a Mediterranean diet. I think they're good fats and bad fats. I think that the American Heart Association, the typical American Heart Association low-fat diet is something that's very hard for people to basically go on. And it's so limited at times that people just generally don't like it. And that's really, I think it's important when you're going through life to basically make dietary changes that you can live with, that you like. So my recommendation, first of all, continue to exercise, make sure your weight's under control, and then I would take the Mediterranean diet. And that's all I would do. Your numbers are not that bad. They're just, okay. They're a little bit over normal, but a Mediterranean diet is the way to go. Not a low-fat diet, a Mediterranean diet, which has nuts in it, it has fish in it. When it uses chicken and other things, it uses small amounts. That's what I would do.
Great. Thanks for the suggestion. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's open up the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. Let's take a listener email. The following question came from a listener in Texas who writes, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on bariatric surgery, the sleeve in my case, for lower BMI.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 59. Okay. My BMI is 33. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have no illnesses, mm-hmm. comorbidities.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried dieting once. I lost over 50 pounds over 18 months.
Wow.
By using a personal trainer and eating no processed foods.
Wow.
6 years later, mm-hmm. I've gained back only 25 pounds. Mm-hmm. I lose weight easily, by just focusing on what I'm doing.
Got it.
Why do I want surgery? To quickly drop 60 pounds, to get a healthy weight quickly. I'm getting older. I don't want to go another 24 months losing the weight like I did last time. It's slow. A lot of W's there.
Well, it is slow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, I'm getting older. I understand it's hard for the first 3 months, and it's a change that will need to be managed and considered for the rest of my life. It's not the easy way. I'm active, kayaking, hiking, bicycling. I want to do these things better and faster and longer. Additionally, I've seen friends and family need at-home end-of-life care. Mm-hmm. If that should happen to me, being lighter would make it easier for caregivers to help me, move me, etc. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on bariatric surgery in general and for patients like me?
Well, I think bariatric surgery is great for people.
Okay.
I think, but there are many, many issues involved with it. First of all, there are psychological issues. You can have bariatric surgery, the sleeve or the run, why the other procedures also. You can have the surgery and fail because you have to make a difference in your lifestyle. You have to eat differently. The surgery helps, makes a big difference, but if you don't actually take all of the information in the surgery and apply it to changes in your lifestyle, it doesn't work.
Okay.
So I think that's the first thing. So it sounds like this person is really interested. They exercise. They want to do it the right way. I think the surgery is very, very helpful. And many, many people still get the surgery and do well. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the percentage is who fail on the surgery, but the people who fail are those people who think the surgery is the whole answer. Mm-hmm. And the answer is the surgery is part of the answer. And the sleeve can make a big difference because it changes how you eat and when you feel full. And that often is a bariatric surgery that can be extremely useful. So my answer is, yes, I am pro bariatric surgery in a situation like this.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
zorba@wpr.org.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is from a listener in El Paso, Texas. But wait, before we hear that voicemail, can I do a quick digression? Is that okay?
Of course. Of course. Please.
I think even if you said no, I would have probably done it anyway.
That's right.
So I was looking, I love looking up cities and who, you know, notable people from those cities.
I know. That's
El Paso,
right.
Texas.
I know you like that.
Sandra Day O'Connor, Supreme Court Justice from El Paso, Texas.
Nice.
Stevie Nicks from Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, nice.
Another El Paso, Texas native. And here's a lesser known one. Have you heard of Jack Handy?
Not at all.
Okay, he was a comedy writer. He was on Saturday Night Live in the 90s, late 80s, I believe. That's when I was really tuning into that show. And he was known for creating a segment on the show called Deep Thoughts. Do you remember Deep Thoughts
sort
at all?
Sort of vaguely.
Okay.
Sort of vaguely.
It was kind of a surrealistic, like one-liner thing, interstitial segment.
I
they would play it between sketches. And I used to love them. I thought they were so funny. So I don't want to play one of my favorite ones. Is that okay?
Sounds good.
This is so, I know
I'm
this
game.
Is such an aside that's
game.
Shoehorned
I'm
into
game.
The show.
That's, you know, I'm game.
Okay.
I'm game. Public radio people can, they can hear shoehorned things.
Okay,
let's
good.
Go for
let's
it.
Let's hear Deep Thoughts from Saturday Night Live.
And now Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy.
If a kid asks where rain comes from, I think a cute thing to tell him is, God is crying. And if he asks why God is crying, another cute thing to tell him is, probably because of something you did.
It's a little dark, but I used to just be rolling on the floor laughing at these as a kid. They were so funny.
The voice.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. I remember the voice.
Anyways, that's a guy from El Paso, Texas. So anyways.
Anyways, let's
hear
on.
The voicemail.
Yes, let's hear the voicemail.
From El Paso, Texas.
I'm 86 years old. I take Aleve for my arthritis. The last time I went to my doctor, she told me not to take Aleve anymore because it was toxic to my liver to go to Tylenol. The only thing about it, Tylenol doesn't do anything to me. So can doctors over tell me Aleve is bad for the liver? Thank you. Bye.
Well, it turns out some of the issues here. First of all, Tylenol is the safest analgesic you can take, okay, in the proper dosing. You know, 2,000 milligrams up to 4,000 milligrams for some people who don't drink any alcohol, that it's a very safe drug. But when we go to anti-inflammatories such as naproxen, which is Aleve, or ibuprofen, we run into risks actually that really occur with the kidney. The kidney function test, as we get older, the kidneys don't work as well, and basically the elimination of anti-inflammatories can produce an issue. Same thing for the stomach. We don't have exactly the same lining in our stomach, so there's an increased risk of GI bleed. So generally what we say over a certain age is use Tylenol. If you're bothered on certain days, then I think using Aleve probably is just fine. Depends on your numbers. I can't see the numbers of this particular person, but for many people, an occasional anti-inflammatory is okay. But at 86, you don't want to take it every day because you can run into problems, and that's where it came from. And I wish there were a totally safe alternative that would work as well, but the answer is all anti-inflammatories pretty much fit the same exact way.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we head out today, Zorba, let's end the show on a high note. The following email.
I like it.
You like a high note?
Yeah, of course.
You're a soprano. You
yeah,
were
that's
a
right.
soprano.
I know,
you
I know.
You do a high note.
I know.
The following
I thought
email.
Your brain would go that way. <That's> I was
obvious.
Kind of leading you in the other direction.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
This came from Janine in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And I think, Zorba, you should read this email. Is that okay? Do you mind reading this one? Okay, I'm going to pass it over to you.
Okay.
All right, let's hear it.
Greetings. I'm a 59-year-old Midwest longtime listener. I'm catching up on previous episodes, and now for 2 hours in a row, a listener has contacted your show. First, it was a complaint that you two talk over each other. Not really. Second, a guy called in and claimed that Carl's use of the word all right is condescending. Should only be used, he said it should only be used towards the end of the show. I think this is all crap. I'm tired of armchair people calling in nitpicking. My goodness. If you missed the previous co-host, and yes, he was a radio icon, that's right, get over it. He's retired. I'm sure Tom approves of the new host. Quit attacking the new guy. I certainly agree. And no, we don't want Zorba's show to change much at all. But it hasn't. The core is still there. Caring, funny. This is really nice. I like this.
Yeah.
Close to my hair. Serious and lighthearted and greatly informative. I love Dr. Zorba. How can I say that? But I am. And I really like this guy, Carl. I find his youth and little comments about his family endearing. Thank you.
See why I wanted you to read that one?
Yeah,
I didn't
see
want to
that.
Read
you
that
got
about
it.
Myself.
I got it. You know what? This is pretty nice. I'll take this.
That's really
That's
nice.
That's why you've been calling me legendary, because of this email.
I was
got
I was buttering you up for
got
this email.
It. I got it. Okay.
Thanks, Janine in the UP. Appreciate it. All right. Do you have thoughts about the show? Please share your story with us by posting on our Facebook page or just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right. Should we do this again next
Absolutely.
Week, Zorba?
Absolutely.
Okay. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call the show anytime. And
anytime.
Leave us a voicemail at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor.
On Your Health.
From WPR.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.